knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
I have a quick question for you.
Uh-huh. What is it?
What's your bright spot today,
buddy? I'd like to turn the tables on you.
Ooh.
What's your bright spot?
I will tell you what my bright spot is, Dan. My bright spot is, now normally, in this point in time, if I were to say the word tennis, who would you think I was talking about?
Well, it can't be Rafa because you want me to think that it is.
Exactly.
So it's got to be Agassi.
Not quite.
Sampras.
No. So
that Greek guy.
Very close. Two kids, right? Carlos Alcaraz, world number one.
At
19
guy?
Years old. No, he's my new Spanish Adonis.
Oh, okay.
Right. I had 19-year-old Rafa for the last 20 years.
And now you've got Alcatraz.
Now I've got 19-year-old Alcaraz.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing Yannick Sinner, right? Who is another 21-year-old kid, right? They are two of the best players in the game, and they just played one of the most incredible matches that you see outside of like a Rafa or Federer or a Rafa and Djokovic kind of match. They were playing incredible tennis. It was amazing, and it was like, oh, thank goodness. After this, you know, people have been yelling about the big three era being like, oh, what are we going to do after that? You know, all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
We got cool shit coming up, man.
Nice.
It's really, really fun to watch.
It is. It is always a great feeling to know that the next generation's going to be going to have some hits.
It's been brutal, you know, under Rafa and Federer and Djokovic, that next generation was so beaten down psychologically of like, we're never going to win.
I feel like I don't know if this is applicable, but maybe this where my mind goes is like I was a basketball fan around that time after Jordan,
right?
And so that sort of evokes that feeling in me of like the sort of the end of Jordan's career and then the like new crop of folks that were coming up.
Sure.
You know, folks like maybe Karl Malone and Charles Barkley had been beaten down by we're never going to win it.
Right,
Patrick Ewing's like, I'm not going to win it.
Patrick Ewing was not going to win it. No.
So like maybe, you know, maybe there's a little, I don't know. I'm just trying to relate.
No. I understand. It's like Kobe would never be able to flourish if Jordan were still around.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe's whole thing would have been eaten alive by Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And only by Jordan leaving was Kobe allowed to try and take over that mantle of Jordan.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing.
And then there was the Allen Iversons.
Totally.
The Stephon Marbury.
Sure.
The Keith Van Horn.
But it wasn't until LeBron that we got new Jordan.
The Ostertag.
And then it wasn't until Durant that we got a perfect score.
Big Country Bryant Reeves.
And then the next person coming is this guy named Wembanyama. He is 7'3". He can shoot as well as Steph Curry. He's smooth. Like a 7'3" guy is supposed to lumber, you know? He is like a lizard. He's like a snake. He's just going wherever
just
he wants.
A big old 7-foot lizard.
He is going to be the, like, everybody in the planet is like, oh, I don't know what basketball is going to look like after this guy, because he's just going to lay waste to this world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
Laying waste to the world.
What's your bright spot, buddy?
Man, I'm conflicted. We're recording this on the same day that we recorded Monday's episode.
Sure.
So coming up with another bright spot.
Two bright spots in a bag. I thought about it before we came today. I was like, I had to get my second one in the chamber.
I can't say what happened at WrestleMania week night one because it hasn't happened yet. It's still this evening.
That's true.
I can't pretend that it's day two because that's tomorrow.
But I will say that your bright spot almost certainly would have been WrestleMania's action.
If history is prelude, it wouldn't be. Because usually I'm disappointed.
Oh, okay. So your bright spot is this. Once again, you get to live in the joy of anticipation.
I don't have buyer's remorse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your bright spot is it's the possibilities are still endless.
Yeah. You know, there is something to that. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen.
Anything.
They all could have a great time out there.
could be hit by a meteor. You don't know.
Logan Paul is fighting Seth Rollins.
I'm not saying it would be a bright spot, but it would be notable if all of a sudden, like, the greatest tragedy is the first night of WrestleMania was hit by a small meteor.
It would, I mean, it would move the needle.
It would move the needle.
People would be talking about it.
Yep.
But would it be a work? Would it be a kayfabe meteor? That's the question.
It was Vince behind it the whole time.
Right.
He was sick of having to get, he got kicked out. Now he's back after the meteor
with
strike.
Meteor powers. The time that he was away, he was on the top of a mountain.
Man. Yeah, he's fighting against people with blonde hair. Yeah, I'm all into it.
This is actually kind of appropriate to be my holdover bright spot.
Sure.
Because wrestling might come up on this episode.
Okay.
In a very depressing way.
Oh, no.
So today, Jordan, we're going to be in the past.
Yes.
Because like we mentioned, we're recording this in advance for your vacation.
Indeed.
So, you know, what can you do, really? I mean, we could talk about a Project Camelot,
sure.
Some other thing, or
sure.
We can stick around in the past. And I'm having fun swimming in these past waters.
I'm loving the past, and I'm also loving the, like, newfound lack of destination about the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling less like we're looking for an investigation. We're not doing that.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
I think I enjoy it too, because we can take what comes, mm-hmm. and we can get little mini investigations along the way. Like,
yeah.
what does he do about Saddam?
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, that backfired on me hard with the Teen Scream thing.
True.
But that was really just me panicking and trying to find something for our live show.
There is a little bit about that.
So, I don't know if we have any progress on any real fronts.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But there is one thread, actually, that continues in the last clip of this episode that I laughed my ass off when it happened.
Okay.
So I'm very excited to get to that. But first, before we get into anything, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, I think it's Ian. It's spelled E-O-I-N from Scotland, but I always want to say Eoin.
Yeah, Ian.
It's Ian?
Yeah.
That O is out of place. Anyway, you are now a policy wonk. Thank you.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
I feel like people are fucking with me here, too, because I just looked at the next one. Thank you so much, president of the Finnish Knowledge Club, Knowledge Fight fan club of Espoo. The city is pronounced like Espo, not Espoo. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
I get it.
Thank you very much.
I don't know how to pronounce things. Next, at Jack Durden. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And my wife's tennis partner has Uncle Howdy elbow. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
I'm worried about that elbow.
Mm.
We got a tech grade in the mix, Jordan.
Ooh.
Also, so thank you so much to Chris and Cheyenne. Would like to announce the birth of Copeland H. on December 3rd, 2021, Blackjack. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
That's a palindrome date.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say they did that one on purpose.
I think that was a joke.
Yeah.
But I think it might have been a real baby.
I think it may have been a real baby.
Yeah.
The jury's out on that still.
Yeah.
I don't have any proof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we start here. This is going to be covering the period of January 27th, 28th, and 29th.
Mm-hmm.
We actually don't have anything on the 28th. The audio is jacked.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So
yeah,
we jump to the from the 27th to the 29th. And here's where Alex starts out on the 27th. He's talking a little bit about bird flu. Which we know is a bioweapon in the present day. In the present day. But what was it in 2004?
Let's find out.
But the bird flu outbreak is deadliest on record. And why suddenly do we see all this showing up? And why are they fear-mongering? It's obviously serious if it's killing people and it's a deadly strain of flu. But the reason we see the flu is always coming out of Asia is because they'll have tens of thousands of pigs in pens on these giant hog farms right next to thousands and thousands of geese and chickens. And they've done the studies. They've known for 50 years it's because the manure of the different species combine together and becomes like giant petri dishes where different types of flu viruses mutate and merge together. And that's where it's all coming from.
Oh, so it's agricultural stuff? It's a naturally kind of occurring and... Weird. Weird that wasn't a bioweapon back then. So there's this trend we've been tracking here in the past, and that is that Alex's show cuts off constantly.
Yeah.
Like almost every episode that he gets the feed to Minnesota
suddenly
gets
music.
Cut off.
Yeah.
So here, this is the third time it happens within the half hour of the first half hour of the show.
So we'll get into that. Also, what some of the new leaked news memos are saying about the government staging actors playing the part of troops, saying how much they love the war on television. Howard Dean called for microchip ID card.
Thank God for the Renegades.
I was like, yeah, that's a better show now.
I thought the clip that I had there actually had him coming back in. Because he's just kind of like frustrated, but also like, you know.
What are you going to do?
Not that big a deal. He's really varying between whether or not it's a conspiracy or whether it's a very obvious low rent operation.
Right.
Technical difficulty.
What are we going to do with this one? Yeah. I mean, you can't really be mad after it happens this many times, this often. You can't even be really mad anymore.
No.
You know, you can only really be mad if it happens once every month or something. And you're like, this is because somebody fucked up.
But if it's happening all the time and you haven't been able to catch the saboteur yet, that is also why you can't really have it be a conspiracy, because it implies a real lack of effectualness on your part.
Yeah, you should really be looking for that saboteur.
Yeah, especially if it's three times in the first half hour of the show. So Alex decides, let's go fucking low stakes. Tech's not working today. I'm going to talk to my gold guy.
All right.
So he has a guy from Midas Resources on to sell gold. And this dude is intense. He is much more so than Ted Anderson and even Bob Chapman. He is just, this guy, swinging.
I can sell them to you in groups of 10 or 20 mixed up like that. Now, first off, first thing, some of the guys say, geez, I can't afford 10 or 20. You know what? Don't say I can't afford 10 or 20. Call up your broker here at the Alex line, 888-294-6187. Let them know what you need to protect. You need to protect your loved ones. You need to protect yourself. You don't need to protect cable television. You don't need to protect anything else. This is life and death, people. This is absolutely life and death. Give us a call today on the Alex line, 888-294-6187.
Call the Alex line and buy our gold, or else your family's going to die.
That guy has taken a lot of the same sales classes I took at that time period. Or no, a little bit later.
I mean, the delivery is soft and low, but what he's saying is a little bit too much.
Yep.
So I thought this was interesting. This was a guy that I don't know of, or I don't really know who he is even, really. He's just a Midas Resource salesman.
Mm-hmm.
But he said something that I thought was slightly interesting.
I've been doing this for 26 years, Alex. I'm as happy right now with the way gold is going as I was in 1979, because it looks like we're off to the races here. Give us a call today on the Alex line, 888-294-6187. Tell them you're a loyal Alex Jones listener. Tell them you want the Alex Jones special.
We charge more.
As a bonus, anybody that buys 10 coins, I will give a free subscription to the International Forecaster.
All right. Well, Jack, thanks for coming on the show.
The International Forecaster is Bob Chapman's newsletter.
Right.
So Bob Chapman is already financially entwined with Midas Resources as far back as 2004.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit earlier than I would have put it, because I don't see Bob coming on once a week at this period like he does in like the 2008, 2009 time frame.
Yeah.
And even a little bit after that.
Yeah.
But Bob is a much more regular presence.
Well, but you know, maybe he had to, you know, he had to work his way into the trusted, you can go on the radio level of Midas Resources situation, you know?
Could be a Bob and Ted are tight, but Alex maybe doesn't know Bob as well or something.
It could very much be like this is, or just like Ted hires this dude to run a newsletter, and that's it.
No, no, that's not what it is.
Oh, okay.
Bob had his newsletter, mm-hmm. and they started marketing gold. And Bob was also in the gold business.
Sure.
Way back to his roots in South Africa and Rhodesia. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so he had all that history, so he was already in this gold market.
Sure.
So he had his newsletter, and then... like the two of them just kind of entwined their interests.
Okay.
So like if you buy gold, you get a free subscription to the International Forecaster.
Sure.
Then the International Forecaster is always directing people to Midas Resources
of course.
To buy gold.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
an Ouroboros of bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not, I wouldn't characterize it as like he's on the payroll to do a newsletter.
Fair enough.
There's still a little bit more. I think there's more autonomy probably to Bob's newsletter than Alex has on his own show.
Yeah.
Really.
I
mean,
believe that.
Bob's newsletter from a lot of the stuff that I've read is flagrantly racist.
Oh, great.
Like, beyond even what Alex throws out. Some of that stuff is just like, holy shit.
Yeah. It's great when even if you're looking for investment advice, they're like, well, we got to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Can't not be.
Yeah. Well, there's, investment advice only fills up so many pages.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm.
It's really kind of a yes or no investment. Yes, no,
So Alex takes some calls.
Sure.
And this one caller is a little bit, he's got a bad idea.
Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Good to finally get a chance to talk to you. Got a couple of things that I wanted to let you know. One was that you've gone over this thing a bunch of times on the Silverstein video and that. But last Thursday, I decided to send a link in email to about 25 different friends on the page that you had set up on prisonplanet.com with all the different videos and all the different information. And I sent out the 25 emails about 11 o'clock Thursday night, and then Friday I decided to check it because I put in the email that I wanted comments back from any of my friends on what they thought about this. And Friday night, I go to go into my email, check it, and I type in my password, and of course, it says invalid password or username. I tried this three times, got the same message, and I decided to click on the help button, and I did that, and on we get a page that comes up that says this Yahoo account has been deactivated. So I found that to be quite interesting, and I went to go to my Yahoo Messenger to see if I could get on that and talk to some people, and I plug in my username and password, and I get a little message comes up that says, system, your account has been locked for security reasons. So that's never happened before when I've emailed anything out, and I've got this happening now. So that was kind of interesting that happened within a 24-hour period of time.
They're very upset about the Silverstein story.
I can see that.
Yahoo is?
My show would probably go off the air for 10 seconds once a year.
Right.
And now it's continually happening. We've had the phone company out here 8 times and looked at it. We can connect when we're not live. Nothing happens. Then when we're live, this happens. I have to go to a backup studio. I'm considering that now.
So now it's a conspiracy.
Now it's a conspiracy.
So I love the image of these globalists that Alex thinks he's fighting. So, like, they need to do things out in the open because of cosmic laws.
Right.
Because they have to let you know what
totally.
They're doing.
Interdimensional treaties.
Predictive programming, lesser magic. We all know what's
whole
going
thing.
On. So they have to have Silverstein come out on PBS and say that they blew up the building. They have to do it because they have to give you a choice or whatever.
It needs to be done.
But as soon as people start talking about it a ton, they're all of a sudden terrified and want to shut it down by all means possible. To the extent that they would sabotage Alex's studio and close the Yahoo account of some weirdo who probably has 25 friends that he has contacts with on email.
Yeah.
This is silly.
Yeah.
This is dumb.
Yeah. I think maybe you forgot your password.
Mm-hmm.
Or... instead of clicking the reset your password sign, you were like, what if I try my password elsewhere?
It could be also just a coincidence.
Could be.
You know?
Yep. I mean, it is a coincidence.
Tech problem.
It is a coincidence.
Some sort of a tech problem.
It is not a conspiracy, even a little bit.
I see scant evidence.
And by
that, I mean none.
None.
So the New York Observer had a story, I think about a year prior to this, about mm-hmm. Skull and Bones.
Sure.
And so Alex digs this back up.
Now, 2 years ago, the New York Observer was able to perch atop a chimney of a building across the street from the tomb in New Haven, Connecticut, where Yale is based. And they were able to catch on video one of the rituals they do that had been reported and leaked by Skull and Bones members of the past. and that is ritual throat slitting of women and then offering their bodies up to Satan, and then one of the Skull and Bones members walks out in a outfit dressed up like the devil and says, I'm Satan, you can now enter the underworld.
Fun.
Your sacrifices serve me well.
Good time.
And the New York Post reported on it, the New York Times reported on it, Fox, CNN. Peter Jennings, I've got him on video playing it and saying, oh, they're just having fun, what's the big deal?
Yeah, they're all having fun.
I think I would know more about even the most secretive college fraternity-style thing if they were regularly throat-slitting.
Yeah.
I feel like regular throat-slitting is the point at which we would all know a lot more about it.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really important to understand is the tomb is a building, and
right.
There's a courtyard in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it's not like an actual tomb.
It's not a catacombs
right.
underneath Paris
yeah.
filled with skulls.
And so there's a courtyard in the middle of it, and this person was able to get video by standing on another rooftop and looking into the courtyard.
Sure.
And so if they were slitting throats in there,
not hard
in
to
the
see.
Courtyard,
yeah.
First of all, dumb.
Yeah.
And yeah, very obvious, would be observed by a bunch of people. Also, might be finding a lot of bodies.
Yeah. You know, I understand that the rich, we believe that they are capable of so much more than we are, which is true, but there are limits. And I think once you get to 15 or 20 throat slits, or the slit throats,
yeah.
over the decades of Skull and Bones.
But we also know about Alex's difficulty
yep.
in differentiating between like real and fake.
That's true.
And so like he'll talk about how they actually burned a child at Bohemian Grove and stuff,
sure.
like when there's an effigy or something.
Right.
You know, and so like a mock throat slitting or something he would report as them actually slitting a throat.
Right.
Who knows what he even fucking means.
Sure.
So in 2001, a New York Observer reporter named Ron Rosenbaum published an article about how he and a team had spied on what they decided must have been a Skull and Bones initiation ceremony from the roof of a neighboring building from which they could spy into the courtyard.
Ooh.
This is kind of raises an important question. Like, if it's this easy to spy on the Skull and Bones rituals, why hasn't anyone done it previously?
Mm.
It's not like the neighboring building was just built. If the Bonesmen were really as concerned about ultimate privacy as they appear to be, you'd think that they would have the foresight to know that their courtyard was plainly visible from an easy-to-access rooftop.
Yeah.
It's almost like they don't actually need total privacy, but the allure of mystery is the only thing that gives them any kind of meaning in society, so you play into it.
Yeah.
I watched this video, and it's dumb. It's really hard to make out a lot of what's going on because it's at night, and it was shot on the quality of cameras that were around in 2001, so you kind of have to fill in a lot of the gaps yourself, which is exactly what Alex is doing.
Yeah.
From what I can tell, they definitely make some dude kiss a skull, and there's a lot of yelling. I got that much from it.
All right. So they're the Proud Boys.
No cereals.
Oh.
Former Skull and Bones members went on the record and said that this what was on the video was nothing like what they went through in their initiation rites, and it seems unlikely that a group that's so invested in tradition and their own history would just up and change the initiation ceremony into this screamy nonsense. Having watched the video and poked around a little bit for contextual information, I'm inclined to believe the perspective that the former Bonesman Steve McDonald told Yale Daily News when he speculated that the whole thing might have been staged or that there's like a prank going on. Another compelling point he makes is that with few exceptions, these kinds of rites are carried out inside the headquarters.
Yeah, of course!
Not in the courtyard.
Of course!
Yeah. I think this is all really silly, and ultimately it's a situation where the only people profiting from these kinds of stories are the conspiracy theorists and the elites.
Yeah.
The conspiracy theorists get to sensationalize shit in order to craft more interesting narratives to capture their audience and bullshit worldviews. The elites, particularly the Ivy League folk who were part of these secret societies in college, they get to enjoy the mystique that this attention gives them and how the absurdity of it all places them in a somewhat elevated position above the masses. Oh,
yeah.
You've gone through these secret rituals and
yeah.
rites.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
have
yeah.
secrets and maybe even supernatural powers that you don't have access to because you're not one of the elites.
Yeah.
It's all just a dumb game. Might
yeah.
as well be like reality TV, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, why not? If people want to give you a self-fulfilling prophecy of like, oh, look at how cool and secret these people are, why not be cool in secret?
Yeah. Yeah. Lean into it.
Throw in the, yeah, that'd be
awesome.
They're
not going to believe you if you debunk it anyway.
Well, who cares? Yeah. You're a fucking fraternity.
Yeah. So Alex talks a bit about the connections between the Bin Laden family and the Bush family.
Sure.
Which is fair enough. There are connections there.
Yeah.
Alex's version of the story, a little silly. But then he gets sidetracked.
Below is the timeline that details the relationship between the Bin Laden and the Bush's families that culminates in the tragic events of September 11th. Well, I mean, we've got FBI agent Robert Wright standing up at the National Press Club crying, saying, here's the letter where if I tell you what I know, I'll be arrested. That's W199I, folks. That's an order arising out of that order. People still deny W199I when it's in the Associated Press and the BBC admitted. Bush said, don't stop the Bin Ladens, don't stop Al-Qaeda. And again, people just say, well, I'm not going to talk about that. It's not true. Okay, it's not true.
So this document, W199I, is a really useful and mysterious thing in Alex's hands. It's a big part of some of these earlier 9/11 conspiracy theories that have been forgotten to time. This isn't one that a lot of people trot out anymore, and Alex probably doesn't even remember.
Yeah. I propose we shorten it to Winnie.
Fine. At times, it's an FBI thing. At times, it's a national security document, but it's always meant to emanate from the president. The idea is that Winnie is a presidential directive saying that all investigations needed to leave the Bin Ladens alone. The implication being that the Bush's family ties to the Bin Ladens made them negligent, or that Bush was trying to make sure that no one uncovered the 9/11 plot before it could be carried out.
Right.
Alex, ever the storyteller, would exaggerate this in his book Descent into Tyranny, saying that it told, quote, FBI agents as well as defense intelligence officers that if they tried to stop Al-Qaeda, they would be arrested under national security implications. Basically, this is a document that's used to explain why the plot wasn't uncovered within the conspiracy narrative worldview.
Right.
But it's also bullshit. The document itself is from 1996, so
ooh,
Bush has nothing to do with it.
Ouch.
And there's no reason to even assume that Clinton did either. It's a narrow FBI document reflecting a closing of an investigation into one of Osama's family members, Abdullah bin Laden, who was under scrutiny because of his association with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth. The document itself doesn't even reflect an order to not investigate Abdullah. It says that the case that was involved, it opened in February 1996 and it closed that September.
So they were saying no whammies.
Right. No winnies, no whammies. The implication that this relates to an order to not investigate Bin Laden family members or folks from Saudi Arabia comes from Greg Palast's coverage of the document, where he claimed that unnamed sources told him that some unspecified cases were, quote, shut down for political reasons. But nothing further is established, and it's just, you know, you take that grain of something that is unsourced specifically from Greg Palast, and Alex will exaggerate from there into it being like, all terrorism, if you try and stop it, will arrest you.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So if I understand correctly, the evidence is unspecified sources, unnamed sources, giving a third-hand account of what may have happened that they don't know.
And what is an actual, like, FBI document.
Yeah.
That is about the closing of an investigation into one of Bin Laden's family members.
I mean, if I remember, am I wrong? Weren't the Bin Ladens rich as fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were connected to all kinds of rich people and shit.
Yeah, construction enterprises,
yeah.
Saudi Arabia and what
yeah,
have you.
They had all kinds of connections.
Yeah, and look, it's, I don't know, some people might think it's naive to think that just because you're in the family doesn't mean that you have connection with the person who ends up being a terrorist, but maybe they don't.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not involved at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole side of my family I haven't spoken to in 20 years.
They
so,
could
yeah.
have been January 6th.
They could have been they fucking could have.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. The relationship between the Bush family and the Bin Laden family is interesting, but what is not is this W199I. In my estimation, it's a complete zero. But for Alex, it's a cool, specific-sounding document number, so that explains everything that he needs it to explain. Just trot it out. Just like he has his favorite subsection, just throw these things out to blind people with fake specificity.
Yeah, and it is kind of fun to say W199I mm-hmm. whenever you're talking about a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge that.
No. That's pretty solid. I would enjoy talking about a document with a name like that as though I had an idea of what it said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should start.
Nah.
Okay. Say it has something to do with tennis. So Alex is a fake racist statistic to throw
out. Sure.
I want to go over criminal aliens abound in the U.S. from the Washington Times, how they are the crime wave. Then WorldNet Daily, chiefs of police, border security a sham. Organization claims lax federal policies causing murder of cops. Oh, just so happen to have the numbers here from the Washington Times, federal numbers. Did you know that over a third of the cops being killed are being killed by illegal aliens? Cops, I don't care what your superiors tell you. You need to get these criminals off the streets.
Damn. That statistic that one-third of the cops who are killed by undocumented immigrants is not in that Washington Times article that Alex is covering. He's made up that stat. The only time murder is even mentioned in that article, it's in this sentence. Quote, according to figures from 2002 from the former INS and from ICE, more than 375,000 known illegal aliens have been ordered deported but have disappeared pending immigration hearings. Washington area sniper Lee Boyd Malvo was one such alien.
Right.
So he murdered
I remember
people.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that part.
It's a long, long walk from what the article says to what Alex is pitching. The website Officer Down Memorial keeps track and honors the memory of law enforcement officers who have died in the line of duty.
Sure.
In 2002, there were 161 deaths of police on duty. One third of that would have to be about like 54 of them were killed by undocumented immigrants. That's wild.
That's a lot.
Only 57 total police in the U.S. died from gunfire that year. And it seems difficult to imagine essentially all of them were immigrants doing the shooting.
Sure, sure. So what we're saying is that obviously illegal immigrants are not doing all of the shootings. They choose poison. Right. So they've got like little bits of cyanide
that would have been reflected in
they put into coffee
and
cups.
Those stats weren't there.
No poisoning stats. All right. Fine.
A number of car accidents, a number of medical things,
sure.
Just other accidents.
Great.
You know, it is unfortunate, but it's, you know, like when you think about it's not always a hostile murder.
Yeah.
It is sad. It is unfortunate. You know, I decided that I was going to go through the shootings just to see, get a sense of like what the circumstances that surrounded them were.
Yeah.
And some of them were, you know, like a cop was trying to stop a robbery at a store or
sure.
something like that. That's
sure.
real fucking sad.
Yeah.
But I didn't find any that were done by undocumented immigrants. I didn't go through all of them because yeah. I got bummed out at
sure,
a certain
sure.
point.
Well, yeah, and no, I was like, how could you not?
I can't keep going
Look
through
Look at all
this.
These people dying for property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did find though one case that was of Andrew Mickle that year, who murdered Officer David Mobilio in cold blood while Mobilio was filling up his tank at a gas station.
Damn.
So this guy Andrew Mickle just shot this cop,
just walked up blammo and then walked back.
Mickle left a Gadsden flag next to the murdered man, which
reflected
his politics.
When you said Mickle, I kind of thought
Mickle would end up being caught about a week later after he posted online, quote, "Hello everyone, my name is Andy. I killed a police officer in Red Bluff, California in a motion to bring attention to and halt the police state tactics that have come to be used throughout our country." Sounds weirdly familiar.
Yeah.
Alex has made up a terrifying statistic meant to direct the audience's fear, hate, and distrust towards a vulnerable population that Alex doesn't like and which he uses as a political scapegoat. Further, he's claiming that some source backs up his claims when in fact he's just reading headlines in a nutty-ass right-wing publication for articles he hasn't even skimmed.
Yeah.
This is what he does. This is what he's done.
Yeah, I don't think that an argument should last 20 years. You know, like if your argument is, the borders are collapsing and that's where the country, you know, all that stuff, like that can't last for 20 years.
Yeah.
It just can't.
No.
We can't have an argument last that long. We need an argument to last at most 2 or 3 years, max.
The only kind of argument you can really have that lasts 20 years is like free will or not.
These
endless arguments.
And honestly, that argument shouldn't even be had. That argument should take a half hour.
Mm.
Is it real or not? Who cares?
What if I have the free will to make it last 45 minutes?
Yeah, what if you don't? Who cares?
All right. So I got excited because I thought Alex was about to do a movie review here because he brings up Super Size Me. But then it ends in a real disappointment.
Hmm.
Let me just read part of this New York Post article because this dovetails with what I'm about to do. New York Post yesterday. Last February, Morgan Spurlock decided to become a gastronomical guinea pig. His mission, to eat 3 meals a day for 30 days at McDonald's and document the impact on his health. Scores of cheeseburgers, hundreds of fries, and dozens of chocolate shakes later, the formerly strapping 6'2 New Yorker, who started out a healthy 185 pounds, had packed on 25 pounds, but his supersized shape was the least of his problems. Within a few days of beginning the drive-through diet, Spurlock, 33, was vomiting out the window of his car. This was all documented for a documentary. And doctors who examined him were shocked at how rapidly Spurlock's entire body deteriorated.
It
was really crazy. My body basically fell apart over the course of 30 days, Spurlock told the Post. His liver became toxic. His cholesterol shot up from 165 to 230. His libido flagged, and he suffered headaches and depression. Spurlock charted his journey from the fit to flab, the tongue-in-cheek documentary, which he's released at the Sundance Film Festival in the hopes of getting a distribution deal. We'll cover more of it in the next hour. But that dovetails into the next 5 minutes with Debbie Morrow, my good friend at New Millennium Concepts. Not just the food, Debbie, what's been keeping me going all these years, I mean, I get sick maybe once a year, is that I don't drink tap water.
It's a water sponsor. Yeah.
Correct.
I thought I was going to get a nice review of Supersize Me, some weird thoughts that Alex has, because he probably couldn't like Morgan Spurlock,
no.
But at the same time, he doesn't like McDonald's and that kind of stuff. So I feel like he'd be trapped, kind of, for his perspective.
Yeah.
But then it turns out just to be a way to pivot into a sponsored content. Fucking nonsense.
Yeah. See, look at this guy eating McDonald's, hurting his body. I don't drink tap water, but that's because I got good water filters. What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I was making myself laugh quite a bit because I was like, this lady has no chops. She doesn't have any showmanship. She doesn't belong on air. But then I was like, why am I being so mean? She's like the secretary there. There's no reason for her to be on
job.
Air. That's
yeah.
not her choice. They're just doing that. I don't know. She seems like a nice lady.
She probably didn't like break into her boss's office, kicking the door open, like, I'm doing the radio spot today, boss.
Yeah. But it was disappointing.
Yeah.
So the 2004 election is happening.
Sure.
It's gearing up.
How did it go?
Well, at this point, we are now in a position where I think a lot of people understand that Kerry is probably going to be the nomination.
Yeah.
For the Democrats.
Yeah.
And Bush, of course, incumbent. So you kind of know where this is going.
Sure.
It's going to be a skull and bones affair.
Yeah.
So we're going to get a lot of skull and bones talk for the next months, I'm
sure.
Sounds
about right.
But here is a caller asking Alex about the election. And this is my guy. This is not the caller. This is when Alex was like, all right, man. Yeah. You have a brand.
All right.
Jay in Colorado. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, Alex. I wanted to ask you about the November elections. Really, like, who are you going to vote for? Like, who?
Let's be honest. Let's be honest. There is no presidential election.
Right.
And I can prove that from multiple directions. Everybody you're given a choice of is controlled. It's the oldest scam in the book. I control the choices in a certain paradigm, and I give you a choice from within that controlled outcome. You understand?
Sure.
So it doesn't matter if it's Howard Dean or John Kerry, he's skull and bones, or George W. Bush, or Bill Clinton, or Al Gore, or the Easter Bunny. It's all the same agenda.
Yep. So that's where he should be.
Yeah, that's where you live, man. That's the idea.
Yeah, that's where things.
I mean, that's the job opportunity he took.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you talk about where his whole thing came from, like the reason that he became so popular is because there is a thirst for a voice to be screaming this shit at people,
mm-hmm.
because they've watched the transition from Clinton to Bush, the transition from Bush to Clinton, and they've been like, this is the same fucking shit. Nothing different happened. Nobody had any new ideas. Everybody was like, hey, NAFTA's a great idea. And then, you know, like it was nuts. Of course they needed somebody to be like, look at all of these assholes.
Yeah.
They, you know, get rid of all of them.
Yeah. And I think that Alex can appeal to people on that level. And he speaks to people that he probably shouldn't speak to because of this, like, electoralism is a dead end. Any
right.
choice you have isn't a choice. It's been made for you in advance.
Right.
That's what he should be. He shouldn't be doing this bullshit now where he's talking about DeSantis.
Yeah, that's awful.
Get out of here, man.
He should be like, there's no difference between Trump and DeSantis.
He ruined that, though, by his whole 2016 affair. Like, he can't go back.
It's just
brutal. He can't go back and be like, that was the one election that mattered, and that's why I acted that way.
It does get real sad after that. Yeah,
not much you can do.
Yeah, that was the one election that mattered, and it turned out it didn't matter either.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
So like I said, 28th, we're just going to skip over, and we jump in here on the 29th, and I hear a little bird calling me.
All right. Big show lined up for you today. You know, back in early 2002, there's a lot of people in the Bush administration that have second homes in Austin. And I got it directly from someone, let's just say, very close to the administration, that Bin Laden died naturally of kidney failure.
When?
In early 2002.
Oh. I was hoping for before 9/11.
Bin Laden was literally on ice to be rolled out right before the election.
This is Steve.
Yeah.
This is 100% Steve.
That's a big swing. That's a Steve swing.
I don't know about the part about second homes in Texas, but Alex's first interview with Steve was in April 2002. So that is in the time frame that he's talking about.
Yep.
And Steve was almost certainly pretending to be close to the Bush administration.
Why not?
He was involved with Bush H.W.
Yeah.
H.W. Bush. So why wouldn't he? He's close to every president.
I was going to say, yeah, he's claimed to be close to literally everything.
Yes.
He is the global spider at the traveling along the web, depending on where the strings move.
I hate to feel like I'm one of these, like, I don't know. I've never seen the movie, the number 23,
sure.
The Jim Carrey movie where he's number 23 everywhere.
Yeah.
I hate to be like that and see Steve everywhere,
sure.
But I see Steve here.
This is Steve.
Yeah.
There might as well be a cardboard cutout of Steve that Alex has his face in.
And it makes me hope he's around the corner somewhere.
He's got to be there.
Bring Steve in.
I know. That's the only investigation now that really matters. And where's Pechenik?
It's not really an investigation even. It's a hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, it's not an investigation.
We already know where his first interview was.
Right.
And guess what? April 24th, 2002. My birthday.
Hey!
Happy birthday. Here's Steve Pechenik showing up on Alex's show. So, yeah, Bin Laden, long dead.
All right. U.S. forces going after Bin Laden. Sources planned operation into Pakistan, seeks to destroy al-Qaeda. Now, I was told by someone, let's just say, very close inside the administration, somebody who's been on Air Force One and heard the giggling jokes about it, that Bin Laden is dead, died of kidney failure, and his family gets all the big base contracts and satellite contracts and weapons contracts for the U.S. military over there. And they're on the Carlyle Group, and their payment for having their son play the part of the bad guy, he's been CIA since the mid-70s, at least, is codenamed Tim Osman. That's publicly admitted.
Publicly.
Publicly admitted.
Publicly admitted.
Did you know that?
No.
That Bin Laden's name is Tim Osman?
No one has admitted that to me.
I haven't heard Alex admit that. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
That's a strange thing.
Yeah, that one's new.
So the conspiracy theory that Bin Laden was actually a CIA agent named Tim Osman traces back to a 2001 article posted in an outlet called the Laissez-Faire City Times. This is a convoluted and bizarre story, so I'm going to do my best just to lay it out as plainly as possible.
Okay.
This has to do with Ted Gunderson, the FBI agent turned conspiracy lunatic who was part of the McMartin preschool hysteria and a major driver of the satanic panic in the 90s.
Not enough people.
No, they're all over the place. They're everywhere. Keep popping up. In 1986, he claims that he and this guy named, I'm going to stumble with his last name, but it's Michael Rico Nascuto.
Sure.
That's what I'm going to go with.
That sounds good.
He claims that him and this guy, Michael, who would end up going to jail for 20 years on a methamphetamine production and trafficking charge just 5 years later.
Sure.
So the two of them met with representatives of the Mujahideen at a Hilton Hotel in Sherman Oaks, California.
Okay. I'm understanding that right now, someone's resume went from meeting with the Mujahideen to meth producer.
And his resume is even wilder than you can imagine.
See, that's kind of what... Well, there's no straight line between those two.
No. So here, this Michael guy, he also dabbled in arms dealing.
See, there we go.
And so that's why he was there, because of his weapons stuff for the Mujahideen.
Sure.
But from the article, I have no idea what Gunderson was doing there. My suspicion is there isn't a good explanation for why he was there, because it's all made up.
Yeah.
Apparently, the two Mujahideen reps were a white guy named Ralph Alberg and Tim Osman, who is secretly Osama bin Laden.
Okay.
They were over here just hanging out, touring military bases. There's also a side plot about how this Michael guy had figured out how to defy physics and create really tiny nukes.
That was in there?
Yeah, really tiny nukes.
Okay.
Meanwhile, a shady company called Bio-Rad Corporation had, quote, taken over Hercules, California, and were developing race-specific bioweapons.
That's not very rad at all.
It's honestly a whole lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm going to sign off on Alex's assessment that this has been proven or admitted.
I don't know. I mean, if there were really tiny nukes, that would be a game changer. That would be a game changer.
So small.
Imagine how many tiny little nuclear explosions we'd have all the... I mean, I would use those instead of a smoke bomb.
The way they put it in the article, it was that they made suitcase nukes irrelevant.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So okay. I don't think this is proven or admitted. Sure. I'm going to say at best, there's a really sus story that claims this thing, peddled by people who have taught me, by the way of their actions, to not trust the things they say.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is.
Yeah. I mean, so, okay. How does he get to meth producer? I want to know where meth lab jumps in.
Here's what's interesting about this.
Yeah.
He ends up doing quite a bit of time, but he claims that this lab that he had on his property was actually about him, like, mining for platinum or something.
See, that's where, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, but you remember there's that dollop episode about the guy who made a sluice.
Yeah, no, I mean...
and that was all about meth.
That one's true. Yeah. I mean, that's my problem.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going the wrong direction. There is a straight line from meth producer to lying about having been in a room with Ted Gunderson and the Mujahideen.
And creating really tiny nukes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a straight line.
Yeah.
I had it backwards. Yeah. I'm chicken and egging this in the wrong direction.
It's possible that you are.
Yeah.
So I told you wrestling would come up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where it does.
Okay.
Alex is in a mood. He's not feeling great. He's bummed out. He's pissed off that everyone's so dumb.
Yeah.
They're so dumb that they think wrestling is real. And Alex needs to complain about this for quite a while.
Oh, boy.
I mean, WWF wrestling, and to show the mind control, every time I say WWF wrestling is fake, I get threatening emails. I've even gotten calls going, how dare you say it's not real? Oh, yes, it's real. I've been watching since the Von Erichs were doing it, and that's real. It's all real. And there was outrage when Rowdy Piper a few months ago said it's all fake and it went public, as if we needed someone to go public. And you're going, what are you talking about, professional wrestling? Well, professional wrestling is staged. They train for hours every week for the production, the show, the play that they're going to put on. All right? I mean, in the real world, if you hit somebody 50 times in the face and drop them on their head, their neck breaks. Believe me, folks, I punched somebody once and they've been in a coma for 3 weeks. Okay? You know? I'm not sitting there saying I'm a tough guy. That's why I will not get in fights. the last two fights I got in, I'd punch somebody a couple times and they'd, they'd be in the hospital on a breathing apparatus for a few weeks. These giant steroided, 280-pound people pounding them in the face over and over again, body slamming their heads, slamming them from the ropes, and you idiots, and I'm not talking to my listeners, but the few out there that don't understand, you're the same folks that think Bush is a conservative, you will threaten me and send me emails going, it's real, it's real, it's real. Oh, yeah, folks. I've been in a 30-second fight and ended up having my leg broken before. I mean, the problem with America is most of you never been in a real fight either. We just got a domesticated jellyfish population.
Alex is exposing the business.
Is that a problem?
I don't know. So the whole idea behind this is essentially him saying that, like, the political, like, the election is staged.
Right.
You know, it's like wrestling. Two people pretending to fight, but they're not actually, you know, fighting each other.
Sure,
it's choreographed and what
it's
have
kayfabe,
you.
Yeah.
But he gets lost in this insulting a fraction of his audience that thinks wrestling is real.
Yeah.
And it goes on for quite a while. He really seems to be upset about his audience being dumb.
Yeah.
On this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, he seems very impressed with himself for being able
to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, I don't remember the era where people did argue about whether or not it was real or quote unquote fake. You know, I don't remember that time period.
Right. I don't think we were alive really for the heyday.
Yeah,
of it.
And for the like the genuine feeling behind it. You know, like when I was growing up, the is it real or fake thing was like not is the staging real or fake, because obviously it's fake.
You can't do some of those things.
You can't do some of those things, right? Yeah. But the question was like, is the pain and is the hitting real and that kind of stuff? Mm. Or were they doing this choreography? You know, that was what I remember growing up.
I think for me as a child, a lot of my earliest awareness of wrestling, because my parents wouldn't let me watch it. So it came into my life through a friend who watched it. And it was around the time of the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah. And Goldberg
So there was an added element of weirdness to kayfabe at that point, because there was a like the whole thing with the NWO with Hulk Hogan and Scott Hall and Kevin Nash was that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall showed up in WCW and they pretended that they were invading from the WWF.
Right.
And so there was this weird thing of like they seem to be causing a lot of trouble. You know, like and I was 11 or 12.
No, that's the point. Yeah, that's what wrestling is for.
So the kayfabe of the like storyline and stuff was fairly confusing on that aspect. But yeah, as a child, and pretty easily came to understand from watching it. Just some things from a physics perspective don't work.
Yeah.
The thing that I want to point to though here with Alex is that he's trying to, in theory, make a metaphor about the political system being like wrestling.
Right.
But he's not doing that.
No.
In actuality, he's complaining about wrestling.
Yes.
And some of his audience not knowing that wrestling is fake.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's weird.
Because he left the part about where he wants everybody to know that the politics is theater, and then got really focused on the personal issue that some people get mad at him for telling them that wrestling is fake.
He gets lost very easily, and that's weird.
Yeah, the focus should have been like, I'm mad that people aren't awake for the government, not like, oh, swear to God, if somebody tells me that wrestling is real again, I'm going to be furious. Like, no, remember the politics? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. And he complains a bunch more about wrestling.
Of course.
But
of course.
Before he does, he complains about how his audience don't know how radios work.
Sure.
Grown men believe that's real. And some people say, well, how could it be staged in a presidential election? You know, how could that happen? Hey, that's impossible. Yeah, we've got a country that believes that wrestling is real. And I guess this was built into our minds in John Wayne movies, where John Wayne would punch somebody 45 times in a bar, and they just have a bloody nose. You punch somebody 45 times, they will die, guaranteed, if you're really punching somebody. Again, it's all false reality. People don't know. Most people don't think about how food gets to the grocery store, how they hear radio shows. I get questions all the time by people. Well, how do I? I've been listening to you in Austin on radio, and I heard you in another city, 1,000 miles away. Do you live there too? And these are people with businesses and families, and I go, satellites. You know, people don't think how things work. They don't know how many continents there are. They don't know where Iraq is. They don't know what the Bill of Rights. They don't know anything. They're just mindless idiots. And I'm starting to realize this more and more. And it just scares me to death.
Who are you talking to?
I have no idea.
You're on the radio in another city. Do you live there? To what?
I mean, here's what I see. Here's what I see this conversation being. Somebody is trying to have a polite little small talk conversation with him of like, oh, you know, I kind of don't really know how radio works. Like, you know, I can hear you simultaneously in another city doing something.
That very well might be.
Easy.
It's just as likely it's someone who's been lost in the woods since the days of Marconi.
Totally. You know,
just like, what is this magical technology?
How do they fit the little man in there?
What he's saying, it must be a time traveler.
It's crazy. It's 2004.
This doesn't speak highly of the people he associates with.
Also, didn't we have World Star back then? Most people knew how a fight really kind of went, right?
So Alex takes some calls. He's in a bad mood. and still is complaining about wrestling.
I don't want to get off into a rant here. I'm in kind of a bad mood today. You might have picked up on that.
I did.
Let's go ahead and talk to Ralph in Tennessee. Ralph, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Alex?
Well, I'm a conspiracy theorist because I say professional wrestling is fake.
What a whiner.
Professional wrestling is nothing but a joke. That's all it is. It's just all rigged. It's a joke. It's they know who's going to win, who's going to lose. It's a big bile payoff system.
No, it's not liberal.
Oh, boy.
It's fun. What is going on? Sometimes telling fantasy stories is fun.
Alex doesn't like fun.
The Lord of the Rings came out at the same time. Are you going to be like, they knew that Frodo was going to drop
actors.
It in there? Come on.
That's just Andy Serkis.
It's all staged. Yeah.
That's not even Gollum. So we got some more wrestling talk with another caller.
Sure.
And something comes up about Kerry here that I thought was pretty interesting.
John and Mash, go ahead.
Yeah, I just got a couple questions. As far as John Kerry goes, with this whole skull and bones connection and everything.
Let's call him Hulk Hogan, and Bush is the Undertaker.
That's excellent.
Well, let's just start calling professional wrestler. or he's...
not
he's,
those two.
Oh, who's the guy that says step into a Slim Jim or the...
Step
I don't
into.
Know. I haven't watched that.
I'm trying to think of names of professional wrestlers because that's the mentality.
Basically. I was just going to say, what do you make... I know, I mean, he has this elite connection with the Skull and Bones secret society thing, but what do you make of his tour of duty in Vietnam? What do you make of
that?
Well,
let's just say he's not a coward. He didn't run off with a bottle of Jack Daniels and cocaine... AWOL for a year and a half from the Texas National Guard.
Because I just found it interesting that he had that connection, but yet he still did that tour of duty.
Well, I mean, in the past, the elites did send their sons off to war. George Sr. Did that, did bail out on his crew, and there was big talk on the carrier that he'd be court-martialed, but of course he wasn't.
Yeah, so the swift boating hasn't gone around yet. Alex hasn't gotten that memo.
Yep.
Also, you know who else served our country honorably? Bonesaw.
I was about to
character
say.
Character that Macho Man Randy Savage
played. I was legitimately going to bring up Bonesaw. I was like, does he think Bonesaw's real?
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man didn't actually defeat him in a fair fight.
That's not true.
No.
That's not true. That
it
was
wasn't
real.
A fair fight.
That was real.
It wasn't a fair
that
fight.
That was real.
Bonesaw couldn't jump on the walls.
Oh, yeah. Bonesaw is ready.
Yeah. I think that in this case, the cream does not rise to the top. Yeah, Alex doesn't remember Macho Man.
Oh, boy.
Randy Savage.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, that's terrible wrestling casting even at the time. You should know better that Kerry and Bush are none of those.
Oh.
Bush is not Undertaker. Kerry's not. This is terrible.
I thought you meant casting Macho Man as Bonesaw.
No, that was great casting.
Yeah, that's good.
That's maybe one of the best parts of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think Alex is just pulling at straws. But
yeah.
It is fascinating to me that he is trying to score points against Bush's AWOL service by saying, hey, at least Kerry served.
Yeah.
When everyone has to know that in a very short order,
the
Jerome Corsi, an associate of Alex's, will start pushing a lot of the Swift Boat stuff.
Yep.
So I think we'll see that develop even if we, you know, continue down this path in
2004. That'll be interesting. You know, I don't remember actively the way that the swift boating happened. You know, I can only think of it as the strategy, you know, that like go for their strength kind of thing instead of fighting their weakness. So it'll be interesting to see.
You'll learn.
Yeah, I'll be interested to hear the narratives again.
Yeah, I bet there's way more than we even realize, too.
Oh, totally.
Because like there's the picture of just like the smearing of Kerry that we all kind of remember in a vague sense. But I bet there's 100 different side shoots that went nowhere.
Totally.
So we get another caller.
Sure.
And this guy found a kindred spirit in Alex.
Okay.
And then he has a critique of John Kerry that I think is a little bit dumb.
Malcolm, where are you calling us from?
Good morning. I'm Richland Park, Illinois.
All right, good to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm a new listener. I've been listening for, all of 2 weeks. And I've already got 4 or 5 of my friends listening to you.
Thank you.
That's a good feeling to find out that you're not alone in the world, that you're not nuts, because when I've been researching these types of things in New World Order for about the last 15 years at least, and when I try to talk to people about it, they tell me I'm nuts, you read too many books, you got too many thoughts running around in your
head. Yeah, I've heard that. You read too many books.
Right.
Oh, we got a reader, boy. This is bad.
I've even been told I'm going to run myself nuts by having too many thoughts running around in my brain, you know.
Buddy.
So, this guy, Kerry, is the strangest looking person I've ever seen. He reminds me of someone in one of these sci-fi horror flicks where they have a human-alien hybrid. He's just a strange-looking guy. And,
well, they're all inbred.
You may have had too many thoughts.
Okay, so he looks like he looks
weird.
Is the criticism that he may be a human-alien hybrid, or is it that he just looks like he could be a human-alien
hybrid? It's not developed. I would suspect that it is possible. He's saying that it is possible that he's a human-alien hybrid.
Sure.
But as direct as the criticism ever gets is like, that John Kerry guy looks weird.
I mean, I suppose, like, what? I'd say his head is slightly larger in proportion, maybe? Is that what you would say? Is that why you would go with alien-human hybrid? Because I think he looks like a normal guy.
Looks normal enough to me.
Yeah.
Although I do love the idea of, like...
are you a human-alien hybrid?
We got to move on.
Okay.
I like the idea of, like, some other show that takes itself seriously with a caller, like, being like, oh, man, I've been researching the New World Order forever, and, you know, people say that I read too much, mm-hmm. and this person looks weird. All right.
Got too many thoughts in my head.
So the same caller, we get back to wrestling.
Coming back.
Well, Malcolm, I mean, looking at this election, is it not WWF wrestling?
Listen, my son is 32 years old. He still believes that that's for real, and we have these arguments about it. So now I just laugh at him. I don't even contend with him anymore on that. I said, anytime you get a man that weighs 350 pounds, jump up and down in the face of another man, and the guy gets up and shakes it off and throws him out of the ring, you're going to tell me you don't know that that's fake? You know, and when you
I guess
talk,
your son's never been in knockdown dragouts.
Well, yeah, evidently not. I know he used to fight coming up as a kid. But,
well, I guess that's a good thing for him. But I mean,
so we kind of got off track again.
Yeah,
because Alex is trying to talk about the metaphor of the election being like wrestling.
Right,
and the guy's like, "Oh, my 32-year-old son still thinks it's real." I bet he doesn't.
No.
I bet the dad just thinks that he does because the son still likes wrestling.
Right.
And that's the way that the dad rationalizes that, like, you're watching this crap.
Yeah, the only way you could like this is if you thought it was a real sport.
Right.
You can't possibly like this because it is a theater production.
I'm not in kayfabe, so I don't understand it from the outside.
Right.
Anyway, not productive.
Nope.
Not a whole lot going on.
So that guy's point was, Kerry looks weird and my son doesn't know that wrestling's fake.
More or less, yeah.
Wow, we got a reader here.
Big time. So we have one last clip here, Jordan.
Yeah.
Like I said, this was really funny to me. This was great. And it's a continuation of something from our last 2004 episode that is frustrating Alex to no end.
Dave, go ahead, Dave. Where are you calling us from?
Hey, Alex. Michigan here.
Welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was looking in my encyclopedia of film. And the movie I came up with, the 1914 Tyrone Power movie, is called Aristocracy.
This is another movie, sir, we're talking about.
Well, it's not the same movie?
No.
Because that shows, in my book, it shows that was the first movie he was ever in.
Well, we're not talking about this individual. It's some reason we talk about this Italian movie showing Moloch worship, and then it turns into this Tyrone Power character. Totally separate. What's on your mind, sir?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's on his mind.
I love the idea that hopefully for like the next weeks, people just keep calling in and telling it. This is now like spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
It started with a caller who said that he saw this movie from 1915, this Italian silent movie.
Yeah.
That had Moloch worship and what have you. And then Alex wanted a copy. Another guy calls in and he's talking about a Tyrone Powers movie. I think that's the name. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know film.
Could be.
And so it's the wrong movie,
yep.
But Alex is like, he listens to him for too long before they realize it's the wrong movie.
Right.
So now this caller is calling in with another movie starring that guy.
It might be the right
same
movie.
Actor.
Yeah.
So good.
It's like if IMDb was calling you.
Yeah.
Like, is this the actor you were looking for?
It's so
what
great.
Are his most notable roles?
Yeah. Like, in terms of things that are really funny about Alex, like these clips that get posted online,
yeah.
Sure, there's a cheap funniness to it.
Sure.
But the real rich, dense funny you can only find by going through this and listening to Alex's frustration at people bringing up Italian movies from the 1910s.
Yeah, you're just not going to... You can't cut that into a clip for Twitter or something, because that requires you to do something that no InfoWars listener can do, which is follow along with the story over a great length of time.
Yeah, there's a lot of context.
Or you have to... I mean, I guess you have to follow along with the story for a long time and then slowly collect these clips.
Yeah.
So later on, you can have a supercut.
Or you have to remember that they happened
exactly.
at all. And,
yeah. There's no way to do that unless you're, I don't know, you.
Yeah. So we come to the end of this, Jordan, and I'm not sure we learned anything too impactful, except for that Tim Osman is Osama bin Laden.
Sure.
And that Alex doesn't know about swift boating yet.
I feel like you're... Here's what I'm saying about the Tim Osman, okay? You've got a better story if it's an anagram of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
You know? That's the story, is that if you rearrange the letters, then you get Osama bin Laden. That's how you do it.
I think it would work better.
Yeah. Punch up again.
You got to work with the materials that you got.
That's fair.
Tiny nuke guy, Ted Gunderson, did what they did, and they got what they got.
Yep. Meh.
So I hope you've had a good trip by this point, because it'll be the end of your trip by the time this episode comes out.
We'll be back.
I'll see you when you get back. But until then... We have a website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep, we're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yep, we'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. Oh, you know what?
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.